Please have the Bible reading we had open, we had before open in front of you, Matthew chapter 18. This is a passage that speaks to what it means to be childlike before God. And throughout this term, we're going to be coming back to this theme from time to time. We're going to have a series on Exodus starting next week, but over the term, we're going to be coming back to this understanding of childlikeness, because it is so foundational to who we are as God's people, and particularly as his people gathered in this place. And so here at the new year, we're going to be looking at this passage, and it begins with a question which interacts with perhaps how we're thinking as we start our new year. 2017 lies before us, and this is one of those times when we look ahead and think about where we're going and what might happen with ourselves, with our family, and in our church. And in this reading, there's a question right at the front, which may come across as a little strange to be asking, but it's actually a very useful question at the beginning of this new season. And that question is the question the disciples are asking. Verse 1 of chapter 18. At that time, the disciples came to Jesus and asked, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Now, the way I'm used to reading this is to sort of imagine the disciples, like Peter, James and John, are looking at each other like a bunch of insecure teenagers, sort of going, well, let's work out the pecking order. Who's the alpha disciple? Who gets to wear the ecclesial cone of shame? For those who know up, right? Who's the greatest? And it's like they come to Jesus and go, pick me, pick me, pick me, I'm the greatest. And perhaps there's an element of truth to that, because we do read about how the mother of two of them came to Jesus later and asked, which one can sit on your right hand and your left hand? But if we look at that question this way, I'm not sure how relevant is it to us. I don't know if that's the question we're asking. You know, are we going, how great am I, Jesus? Am I greater than that person or this person? Pick me, pick me. Is that the question we're asking? I hope not. Although I do know the ways of the human heart. But there is, I think, a question which, I think the way in which we can look at this is to actually look at a way in which this question is not petty. Because the disciples are not asking, am I the greatest? They're asking, who is the greatest? And that's a question which relates to things such as virtue and aspiration. And it's a very good beginning of the year question, because it's actually asking about what makes for us to be successful in the kingdom of heaven. Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And in that sense, it actually does engage with what we do at the beginning of seasons, like one we have right now. We do it all the time. One of the things we do is we look at our context, we look at our world, and we work out who the great people are. We work out who the successful ones are, the ones who have influence, the ones who have a life that we wouldn't mind having, and we wonder how we might be more like those people. What habits do they have? What opportunities do they seize? What qualities do they show? What can we copy from them? How can we share in their greatness? And that's not necessarily a bad question. And in fact, in many ways, what the disciples are doing here is taking that question right in the right direction. Because they don't just come to Jesus asking, who is the greatest, full stop. They come to him asking, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? It's like they're saying, we know what it means to be great according to the world. We know that the emperor is the greatest politically. We know about the leaders of the Jews and how pious they are. We know how to be great like them. We know what we'd have to do if we wanted to be successful like these people. We know what it means to be great in commerce or industry or devotion to the law or things like this. We know what that greatness looks like. But Jesus, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Who's the greatest according to your framework? Who's the greatest according to how you operate? What does success and influence mean in your world, Jesus? Who should we be aspiring to be like according to your values and your heart? And in that sense, it's actually quite a good question. reminds me of something I heard at a conference quite a few months ago, and there was a youth leader from a very large church who got up to speak. You may have heard me say this before, because it really struck me. He made this remark. He says, "I'm going to tell you the one thing I say that gets the most complaints made about me." He says, "I talk about all these controversial topics. I talk about sex and relationships and ethics and theology. Don't get a peep from anyone. I do crazy games and silly activities, and none of those get complaints. But then I tell my youth this. This is my encouragement to them. I talk to the youth about the most important thing in their lives, and I say to them, I'd rather you get an A star with Jesus than an A star on your A levels. I value your relationship with God more than I value your academic scores." And then I get complaints, he said. You see, rather than asking the question, how can I be great in the kingdom of the world, he's encouraging them to ask, what does greatness look like in the kingdom of heaven? And the very suggestion that this does not line up with the worldly greatness of A-levels and job security is enough to tap into some of the deep-seated fears and insecurities of the people that he works with. So it's a good question. Who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven? But if the question is challenging, the answer is even more so. And this is how Jesus answers it. Verse 2. Have a look with me. Jesus called a little child to him and placed the child among them. And he said, "Truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven, let alone be great in it." That's my addition. "Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." Here's his answer. In front of the disciples and here in front of us at the beginning of our 2017. Whatever we aspire to this year, whatever we are looking ahead towards, even if it's nice and spiritual and Christian, even if it's about wanting a successful church or a good home group, in the end, the beginning and the end of it is this. Greatness in the kingdom of God is marked by childlikeness, of being like a child. "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." Greatness in the kingdom of God is marked by childlikeness. And of course we have to distinguish between childishness and childlikeness. We know that childish things, immaturity, selfishness, petulance, you can name them. We're talking about childlikeness here, which is almost the opposite. It's the vision of maturity. Maturity as it relates to a child, a childlikeness. So what's he saying? Here's a non-rhetorical question. What are the characteristics of a child that Jesus might be alluding to here?
Trust.
Trust.
Dependence.
Dependence. Good words. Did I see a hand in this direction?
Love.
Love.
Acceptance.
Acceptance.
Simplicity.
Simplicity.
Vulnerability.
Vulnerability.
Weakness.
Weakness.
Curiosity.
Curiosity. Like that. Can I just, someone pointed out to me once, if God is sin-free, he is the most innocent being in the universe. And so, like a child delighting in the sun, you can imagine God as someone kicking up his heels in delight every time the sun rises. I thought that was a good image. Because he's not jaded. Any other words? Childlikeness?
Teachable.
Curiosity.
Curiosity. Got curiosity already? That's right. That's fine.
Spontaneous.
Purity.
Purity.
Innocence.
Innocence.
They know how to dance.
They know how to dance. I've been reading something recently
a book about how Jesus approached his ministry as a child. It had a playful propheticness. And one of the things he says is, I played the tune for you and you did not dance. I sang a song for you and you did not weep. It's almost like you didn't join in. You didn't dance with me. It's interesting, isn't it?
Has the character of the parent
of father's the cat, yeah, looks like the parent.
It has some kind of character.
Yeah. Image of God. Brilliant. There's so much there, and we could unpack it a lot. But the two things I want to pick up on tonight are the ones of innocence and purity and of weakness, dependence and trust. You see how there's sort of two things there? Innocence and purity and weakness, dependence and trust. Because what Jesus is doing here, he isn't just giving them an object lesson. He isn't just saying, look, consider this child. Enumerate the characteristics and dwell upon it. I think there's something in that for all of us. What he's saying is, consider this child. Unless you become like this child, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Unless you change and become like the children, this little children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. And that's quite provocative, isn't it? Saying to his disciples. I mean, he's not talking to riffraff. He's saying his disciples, unless you change and become like this child, the kingdom of heaven isn't for you. And perhaps we can think about this at the beginning of our 2017 as we think about how we're going to be successful this year, the greatness that we are aspiring to. Unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. So let's consider, first of all, this sense of purity. If we are to change and become like little children, then purity and innocence needs to be at the heart of our aspiration. And the picture of the child here can teach us something about this. Because we all know we've all been children in this room. Some of us still are. You see, as children grow up, they do something that we often mistake for maturity. They learn to deal with the world. Can you remember as a child something of what it was when you had an innocence and a freedom? When the air was light and you could simply breathe and delight. Now for some of us, that happened before your memory. And that's okay. But can you dare to imagine that? What happens to take away that free air, that lightness from a child? What happens is the world happens. We learn how the world works. We learn how to survive. And sometimes that means being sinned against and hurt. And sometimes that means that we do the sinning and the hurting. Since that time of innocence, we've learned what guilt is. And what regret and worry and fear is. And since then, we've learned how to manage our anxieties and fears because we've learned how to protect ourselves. And often those protective things have hardened us, and often they are inherently destructive and dysfunctional. And so in our so-called maturity, we have become impure. In order to hide the brokenness, to protect against some fear, to run away from the anxiety, we do sinful things. We walk out on relationships. We thirst for money and influence. We dull the pain with addictive behaviours. We get angry. We throw our hands in the air and party hard in the moment. And we look for answers in sex or adrenaline or any other idol that comes along. And we have this propensity since the days of our first mother and father. You know, instead of turning to the Word of God to deal with the world, rebelled against him and turned to themselves to judge according to their own ways. And none of this so-called maturity belongs to the kingdom of heaven. It hurts. It damages. It literally stinks. It's anti-life. None of that has got anything to do with the kingdom of heaven. And so greatness in the kingdom of heaven is as far from it as can be. And so when Jesus insists that to become, enter the kingdom of heaven, we must become like children, it is a call to purity, to turn away from sin and all that is impure and unjust. So how does that build into our aspiration for the new year? How do we embrace purity? Now, some of us right now are thinking about the exact way that you need to turn away from impurity. I'm not going to point at anyone. We all know and have those texts in our spirits and things that we know that we're clinging to that are not of God that we should address and deal with. But in general, one of the things that we need to do is to stop misusing the phrase in the Bible that we often misuse. The phrase that says, do not judge. It's a good phrase. It's written against those who would be hypocritical and condemnatory and holier than thou and have a plank in their own eye. But there's nowhere in the Bible that says that we should never judge at all. In fact, judgment, discernment, assessment and honesty is actually what's needed for us to move towards childlike freedom. Part of our posture before God is to judge ourselves, not in some masochistic way, but honestly asking, am I okay, Lord? What needs to be done? How do I need to change? What impure way in me needs to be dealt with? And Jesus himself alludes to this a little bit later on in our reading when he talks about hands being cut off and eyes being gouged out. He's using hyperbole as he's encouraging people to judge themselves. 1 Corinthians talk about judge yourselves, therefore, that you be not judged of the Lord. It's not about condemnation. It's about honesty before God. A child comes to the father that they trust, having done something wrong, and is honest before them, and says, look, I've broken this, I'm sorry. There's a story from my childhood where I broke something in my house. And I hid the broken thing behind the couch. And my father discovered the broken thing behind the couch. And he lined up the three children in my family. And I wondered why he put me last. And he said to my brother, did you do it? And he goes, no. He said to my sister, did you do it? And she goes, no. And he turns to me and says, then you must have done it. And I go, I didn't have a chance to lie. He worked out my deductive reasoning. When we try and hide it, we are turning away from our trust in our Father. But being childlike and trusting God is actually bringing our brokenness and saying, yes, this is how I am. We need to deal with, help me, help me. It involves an honesty that sometimes we just get rid of by saying, oh, well, we don't judge. It's a heavy thought. But Jesus says, change and be like that little child who will bring their impurity before Jesus, before God, their Father. And the beauty of it is that this call to purity actually relates to the second aspect of childlikeness I want to talk about today, which is trusting. Because the beauty of the gospel is that it brings both the trust and the purity of childlikeness together. How do we embrace purity? By trusting our Father through faith. How do we become pure? By trusting Jesus. We turn to him. We give our lives to him. He counts us as one of his own. His death pays the penalty for our sin. His Spirit renews and regenerates us and makes us born again. He sets us free. And so the childlike dependence deals with the childlike purity and brings us into a place of innocence before him. And there's no other posture that we can bring before God apart from trust. We can't demand it of him. I can't say to my Father, oh, I'll fix it. I could only trust in him to forgive me and to make it right. We can't manipulate him. We can't earn it. Childlike trust is the beginning and the end of our salvation. But let's bring that back to the question we have. Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? What are we looking for in terms of our aspirations at the beginning of this season? Are we being childlike? Are we trusting in God or in something else? What do we look to provide not just the forgiveness we need, but the success we're looking for? And there's always temptations as individuals and families and even as a church to put our faith and our trust not in God, but in ourselves, our abilities and our own resources. Because you know what? I can control those things. I can't control God. And I'd rather trust me than trust him. In that sense, we consider ourselves rich, but have a poverty of faith. And Jesus time and time again deals with this. He speaks about how hard it is for the rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Why? Because it's hard for a rich man to be childlike. He hasn't been driven by his poverty to a place of reliance and dependence and weakness. He says those who seek to save their life will lose it because they're clinging to what they have. They're not clinging in dependence and trust to God. And so it's worth reflecting on at the beginning of this year. In what are we placing our trust for our success? In the end, we have to find ourselves as God's children first and allow everything that is not childlike to be stripped away. Sometimes that's painful. In fact, it's always painful. And the task of growing into true Christian maturity, into greatness that is childlike, is often a time when you have to go through a situation of allowing God to take away the protective things and the things that we've built up over the years. I read a fantastic book over New Year's weekend about the story of King David and how he is one of the greatest people in the Old Testament. And we'll forgive him some of his foibles. But in essence, he is the man after God's own heart. And one of the things this book says, he became this great king. But he never claimed it in his own strength. When it came to overcoming the opposition that was King Saul, when it came to overcoming the opposition that was his rebellious son Absalom, the thing that marked King David was that he didn't take up arms. He simply did nothing and allowed God to strip him back to a place where he was reliant on him and him alone. And this was no theological theory. This was the literal practice of putting down arms and placing oneself at risk depending upon God alone. I want to share a little bit of one of my story here, and not to pump me up, but because it's something that I think illustrates this. Many of you know that in 2010 I had a breakdown. Before then, I trusted in the success of my ministry and in the delights of my congregation and in all the other things that can make a pastor look great. If you ever go to a clergy conference, they do compare funeral numbers because that's what makes us feel great. And long story short, I came to the end of myself. And one day I couldn't stop crying. Some of you know what this feels like. And there were many aspects of that journey that I had to learn. But one of the things that really struck me, in hindsight, was that God pulled me back to be nothing but a child. I became childlike. The guy who was leading PCCs and making decisions couldn't even decide what to have for breakfast. And walking down the street was confronting fear and having to trust in God. Now I say that not because, oh wow, I've done through a wonderful experience. Because it was painful. Now, that's what I want to make the point. That stripping away is actually what makes us. In worldly terms, even in churchly terms, I failed. And I wasn't successful. But in God's terms, He gave me a great gift. A gift of being able to find myself in His arms. When everything else was pulled away, I found myself fallen on His lap. And being able to do one thing only, and that was worship Him. Now over time, that experience fades away. I have to remind myself to go back to it, and I look to people like King David. And I look to people like Jesus to remind me of that. And so to finish, what I want to do is this. I want us to turn to God, the one who we can trust. Because in the end, when Jesus says we need to take the lowly position of a child, the first question is, whose child? Whose lap do we fall into? The great irony of this passage is that the disciples come in with the question, Jesus, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And they should know the answer. Who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven? Jesus. Why are they even coming to Him? And Jesus knows this. Jesus is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And rather than saying, you know what, guys, be like me, He gets the kid up and says, be like this child. And what He is saying there is, Jesus, child, same qualities. The call to be childlike is to be like Jesus. And what that means is that we're not just called to be a child in some general, vague sense. We are called to be a child of God the way that Jesus is a child of God. And to trust not in just some vague concept of childlikeness, but to trust in the God of Jesus Christ. And so what I want to do is this, as we finish up, is I want to read the rest of this passage out to you, and then we're going to sing a song, and then there'll be an opportunity to pray before we close for the night. But as we read this next little passage, what I want to do is I want you to see what's going on here. Because what you see in this reading is a whole bunch of realism about the world. We read about snares and temptations. And we also see how there's warnings against those who mistreat God's children. Never despise these children, he says, because God sees their angels in heaven. And it's full of exhortations for us to be pure. But what we see here also is the Father heart of God. We see how He is jealous for His people. We see how He is passionate for you and me. You see how He is protective of their holiness and our innocence and of our faith. We see how He will seek us out and He will gather us in. We see His heart. His heart that goes, these are mine. These are the ones who I will catch when they fall. These are the ones who I will discipline when they need it. These are the ones who I will strip away of the things that hold them back until they know themselves as mine and mine alone. So let's read this. And as we read it, let's reflect on what this year brings or what might bring or what we're hoping it will bring and give ourselves to our Father. So we're going to read this and then if we can play the next song, guys. Starting at verse 6. Verse 5. Whoever welcomes such a child in my name welcomes me. If anyone causes one of these little ones, those who believe in me, to stumble, it would be better for them to have a large millstone hung around their neck and to be drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe to the world because of the things that cause people to stumble. Such things must come, but woe to the one through whom they come. If your hand or your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to enter life maimed or crippled than to have two hands or two feet and be thrown into eternal fire. And if your eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It's better for you to enter life with one eye than to have two eyes and be thrown into the fire of hell. But see that you do not despise one of these little ones, one of these my little ones. For I tell you that their angels in heaven always see the face of my Father in heaven. And what do you think? If a man owns 100 sheep and one of them wanders away, will he not leave the 99 on the hills and go look for the one that wandered off? And if he finds it, truly I tell you, he is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that did not wander off. In the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish.